Morning, everyone. We are going to start with the Real Estate and Economic Development Committee meeting. As such, can we have roll call?
Chair Shaw, Vice Chair Russell, and Directors Vasquez, Rath, Jenkins, Geisler, and Avila are present. Directors Kilkenny and Robinson are excused.
Thank you. Any non-agenda public comment this morning?
There are none.
All right. Any disclosures, ex parte communications for this item? For this agenda, I should say. Seeing none. Item four is potential agenda items for the committee discussion. None again. Great. Item five is the approval of the minutes from July 2018. And a motion?
Second.
And a second. Please vote.
The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Item six is an update to the downtown comprehensive parking plan. Mr. Verdugo.
Good morning, everybody. Ben Verdugo, Senior Project Manager, Parking and Mobility. Here today with a requested action that the Real Estate and Economic Development Committee receives a presentation and recommends that Civic San Diego adopts the update to the comprehensive parking plan for downtown San Diego. With me today is Stefan Turoff, principal with Walker Consultants, who developed the update to the comprehensive parking plan. He will provide a brief presentation and will be available for questions once the presentation is completed. I'm also available to answer questions on behalf of the downtown community parking district. So with that, Stefan's going to come up and present to you guys.
Thank you, Ben.
Is this on? Can you all hear me? Okay, thank you. Ben, thank you. Thank you, members of the committee, for having us here. This is something that we've been looking at for some time now. This was an update of a 2008-2009 parking study for the downtown that was conducted by Wilbur Smith and Associates. And this is an update. It's been a little bit of a moving target, which is why we collect the data over a year ago now, maybe closer to 2 years, but you know, you've had some changing policies. I noted that when we started this study, I don't think there were any scooters on the street. I don't think there were any bikes on the street. We were just in the gas lamp. We see that there are some bike lanes there. But this is an update. It's a little bit of a comparison to what happened before, but we really wanted to understand what's happening now. So I think although some of the numbers move around, I think the trends remain pretty consistent. So again, like I said, this is an update of a plan that is now about 10 years ago. There have been a number of changes going on, policy-wise, development-wise. You know, we do see surface lots going away. We see more residential. And now we see some of the policies that are going into play that may change how things occur, how parking is affected moving forward. So very briefly, this is the whole study area. I think it's about 10 districts. There's a big buffer right up and outside the five where we see residents and some employees parking. But then as you go inward, you know, there really isn't a downtown district. There are many different districts. And even if we talk about the East Village, which was included 10 years ago, we slice that up a little bit because of you know, different things going on, you know, near Petco Park, away from Petco Park, some of the residential. So this just gives you a sense of all the different areas we were looking at, you know, Little Italy, Columbia. And we tried, I think even more than the last study, we tried to look at development, if we could, on a sub-district by sub-district basis. That said, as you know, the parking demand spills over from one location to the other. So it's not super clean. Here are, and I hope you can see that, some of the districts. You know, we have Central City, East Village, the quarter mile zone outside. And this is basically a comparison. We tried to do as apples to apples as possible. In many cases, it was, for a number of reasons, that wasn't quite possible. But I think the main thing to focus on is the conditions that we're observing now, or at least over the past, year or two. So this is the inventory. You know, on-street parking varies quite a bit. In terms of how it's regulated, You know, looking for spaces, typically when you see one available, 15 minutes is going to be more available than, say, 2 hours. But you see, there's a lot of, the further out you go, the less restricted the spaces were. Just a side note, we found within the core area about 300 spaces at the time that had not been metered, just sort of random spaces that were heavily used because they were free. And not generating revenue. And we thought that wasn't really good for anyone. So that was one of the recommendations. But it's a heterogeneous mix of not only on-street and off-street, but off-street spaces as well. This is just some of the breakdown. So then we have off-street. You know, typically, as in any downtown, there's a lot more off-street spaces than on-street. Although on-street is visible, that's where you get your impression. That's what everybody's looking for. Typically, people don't like to circulate up and into a garage, and even less so a surface lot people are more willing to go into. There's less mystery. But, you know, as we all know, the pricing is very different down here. So people do try to park on-street. That's the highest occupancy, and that's the biggest impact, and that's people's impression of parking as well. So here's some of the on-street parking percentages. Let's start out with the peak. The peak was lunchtime, as is typical in most commercial districts. That's overall, you know, and it does vary in some respects. You know, the gas lamps peak might be a little different. Little Italy, you know, might have a different peak. But where you have a lot of employees, typically those overlap with people coming down, eating, doing things at lunchtime, and that's usually where we see the peak. And then, you know, we also had a similar peak in terms of 80% of spaces overall. It's a blended average, full. But that's on the weekend, not surprisingly, that's, you know, in the evening, 6 to 10 p.m. And you can see those weekend numbers. You know, Little Italy, the Marina, gas lamp. The Marina, I think, has relatively few spaces, so those fill up. So the numbers are similar, but obviously different patterns based on where and time of the week. So here's a little comparison, evening versus lunchtime during the week. And there's some more comparisons. Again, we collected data on over 45,000 spaces. There's a lot of data, and part of our challenge was overall making sense, you know, being able to communicate what we saw and what's going on in a way that's useful. So this is some of that data. Overall, what we found, I think, which is somewhat consistent with the last study, but first of all, occupancies did go up. It's busier here, not surprisingly, than it was 10 years ago, particularly the on-street. But overall, there was still capacity, parking capacity in the on-street and the off-street spaces. And that's, you know, from Honolulu to Boston, you know, we work on studies like this all over the country, and typically you do find, you know, a considerable number of available parking spaces. And then when there's the temptation, when you hear the questions, let's build more parking, the challenge is, well, you have parking, and if we build more parking, is it just going to be more empty parking? Is, you know, unless you change how you're running parking, are the problems that you have just simply going to replicate themselves when you add supply? So I think first and foremost, like I mentioned, the challenges we saw were on street. Low occupancy, it's busy on the street. And depending on where you're driving and when, you do see off-street supply, but it may not be visible, or even more so, the relative price differential is significant. So there's a real, so you have more convenient spaces being priced less. It's, you know, so there's a lot of incentive to use what's on the street and not use off the street. So first recommendation, you know, what's the biggest challenge? It's on-street parking, lack of availability. We strongly recommended that rates go up. And that is, you know, you can increase capacity on the street and in your system significantly when you have a little more turnover on the street, you have a little availability on the street, and some of those cars go somewhere else, whether it's off-street parking, whether it's, off-street parking in the adjacent area, further away, you know, a few people, like I know when I commute, who then maybe take transit once or twice a week, maybe take Uber or Lyft. So I'll just give an example. In Santa Monica, we recommended a similar rate increase in an impacted area about 8 years ago. And we found a lot of spaces full, and they weren't turning. And just like you, we found a lot of areas not heavily impacted, really pretty empty. So when the rates went up in the core area, we found that the impacted car spaces were turning over 2.5 times more. And then the emptier spaces that we saw get filled up. So by 2.5 times increase, we did that with 800 spaces, we found an effective increase in capacity of 2,400 spaces. I don't want to get too technical here, but there's a reason that you do this, and it really does help everybody in terms of availability and making the most of your system. So that's the key recommendation is overall, and you can time it, but we thought that rates need to go up on the street. This is what I mentioned before. Here are the areas where we just found unregulated spaces. And if you come down here a lot, maybe you know where those were. But then, like I said, the spaces don't turn. They don't generate revenue for the parking district. So we recommended, you know, bring those into the system and metering them. And I believe that that has taken place. Okay, the other thing was extend the hours. In a number of cases, traditionally this is true, here and elsewhere, that meters only go so late. Meanwhile, people are out later, certainly in downtown San Diego. And what happens is somebody comes, you know, say at 4 p.m., whether an employee or a customer, they park 4 or 5 p.m., and, you know, maybe they can stay till midnight, you know, by just paying the meter for a couple hours, depending on what's going on there. So we said the purpose of the meter is to manage the street, is to increase the effective capacity, but why only do that in the daytime? So we recommended that you do it at night, and given the residents, have a flat overnight rate overnight to give some incentive for people to move their cars. You know, even a resident who has a space under their building and they pull up and they're like, oh, here's the space right in front on the street, so I don't have to circulate in the garage. Give them some incentive to use the off-street parking and just be a little more mindful of how this parking is being used. So as part of this, I've been talking about how impacted parking is on the street. Off the street as well, we're talking about incorporating private spaces. The first thing that you want to do to get more off-street spaces utilized is to focus on the street. But at the same time, there are a number of programs which we get into detail on to use the off-street spaces more. It can be a formal program, or it can be more informal, whereby raising rates in certain public parking locations, you incentivize a complete market where the off-street becomes more appealing. Or, like as we mentioned, you know, you can formalize this, and we've worked with this in some cities, where if the parking district, you know, actively engages with some of the off-street private parking and says, you know, can we provide this to employees? Can we do something whereby some of the people who may be playing musical parking spaces or using parking spaces that we want for visitors, you know, can we get them into the off-street? So we go into detail about that in some respects. Another thing, you know, as I mentioned, on-street parking in front of your destination is where everybody wants to go, which is one reason that Uber and Lyft has been so successful. Off-street parking in a big structure is almost the opposite of that. You know, you have to find the entrance, you have to circulate in, you have to drive up somewhere, and then as a pedestrian, you have to walk up or down to your destination. So the curb space is valuable. And in a number of places, and we didn't actively quantify this here, though, but there is some chaos or disorderly driving and access with the TNCs, with Uber and Lyft. So we said, can you formalize certain zones? And within those zones, because you're using spaces, can there be a fee? Airports are doing that. We're working with SFO in the Bay Area right now. You know, they have fees for drop-off pickup. With geofencing, this is possible. This is possible in your city. You know, if you're going to take some spaces, remove them from the meters for a car that sits 2 hours, make them an actively turnover zone, and then let Uber and Lyft pay a little fee for the privilege of having this access and this exclusive access to the curb and not double parking along a street where they shouldn't be. So, and again, that's revenue. That's revenue that goes into your parking and transportation system, similar to how your meter, much of your meter revenue is doing right now. So another recommendation was really a district-wide commuter program, a district-wide transportation management association that creates a policy for we know that probably the public employees, government employees do get some benefits, you know, commute versus parking. But what about the private employees? Can you create a district, and they exist in some places, sometimes entirely private, sometimes public, that really looks at incentivizing, not punishing, but incentivizing employees and giving them options? When, you know, to the extent that there are employees here who get a $50, $100, $200 free parking space, and if they got even a fraction of the cash equivalent, so that some of them may choose to park anyway, but some of them may make a different choice. There's a lot of money locked up in the free parking that employees get, and parking cash out is often a solution, but we think that without a TMA, without a Transportation Management Association, that would be difficult to implement. Now, this was something that came up in one of our meetings, and, you know, given the changes in policy in the city, it might almost be, it may be moot right now, but, you know, we talked about, you know, future of autonomous vehicles, people driving less in many respects, and yet, you know, new development may be building parking. You know, can we codify an incentive to that when we build new garages, they are convertible, they are adaptive reuse, they can be flat floor, they can somehow, if the city, the parking district, the developer changes its mind, you know, that these can turn into residential or office or ground floor retail. So, you know, we understand some of the requirements that I think had been placed, you know, regarding subterranean. So the question is, can we make this more of an option? But at the same time, now with the changes in your policy, a lot of the devils are in the detail, and this may not be as relevant as it once was. And again, there are policies that we had in here related or recommendations to the parking requirements, but given the changes that you've seen right here, those have really gone away. So we took those out. Those were no longer relevant. So that's 45 to 50,000 spaces and about a year and a half, 2 years of study in a nutshell. I think, you know, again, I said that the patterns and the policies are consistent. You know, there is a real imbalance between your on-street and off-street. When parking is too crowded, like on the street, when there's not enough availability, that's a problem. At the same time, when you have a lot of available off-street spaces, that's also a problem. That's just asphalt in your very walkable, you know, pleasant downtown. And if that can go for either parking people who are looking for parking or other uses, you know, we think that that's a lot more of a highest and best use than what's currently going on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have any speakers? No speakers. Comment from the board?
I'll go. I appreciate the report, and I know this is parking is always controversial, but I don't disagree really with any of your recommendations in your report. This has been gone over many times over the last 15 years that I'm aware of, and you know, the reason we put meters on parking spaces is not to raise money. Mm-hmm. The reason we put meters on spaces is to create turnover so that people don't park there for 10 hours, 15 hours, days at a time in areas where people need to have ability to quickly get in and out. Mm-hmm. So it's not intended to be long-term car storage. Right. It's intended to be very short-term. And we do that through time limitations and things like that, but that really requires enforcement. I have long been an advocate for increasing the pricing because pricing actually drives behavior changes. I don't see how all the conversations that are having around parking being kind of a net detriment to our built environment, and especially in downtown, I don't see how having artificially low charge rates is getting us where we want to go. I recognize that there's always controversy of storefronts. If I owned a retail storefront, I would probably be concerned too if the government came and wanted to increase the rates. But I think that the long-term effect will be beneficial. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to overcome the perception that downtown is hard to park in. My neighbors outside of downtown feel that way. I feel that way sometimes when I drive to certain neighborhoods. I can't find an available space. But if you look at the economics, the reason is because it's so cheap. why would you park somewhere else than take up all the spaces? So there's not anything available for me if I drive down Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've ever parked on Fifth Avenue physically, and I've lived here my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it ever will happen, but price is an effective way to change that behavior. So I'm certainly supportive of that. What the city chooses to do with the money is their call, and I don't really have an opinion about that or care. But you know, we have a parking utilization problem, and price is a big part of it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, filling some of these gaps of where meters don't exist that probably should seems like a no-brainer as well. Those are just a missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I think dynamic pricing, getting that realistic, you know, parking is not free. Parking is a public good and needs to be priced so that it is fairly managed, and that's our responsibility. So I would support, you know, doing that. I know today's not an action item or an opportunity to actually raise those rates, but I think we should move in that direction.
Director Jenkins.
Thank you. Every time the topic of parking comes up, I'm reminded of a wise statement that a business improvement district manager once made to me, which was that if a business area does not have a parking problem, then they've got a real problem. Mm-hmm. But it's a problem that needs to be managed. I appreciate this report. It's very in-depth, very detailed. I knew when you got into sensitivity analysis discussion, it was way over my head. So I take that as an indication that you've really evaluated the recommendations. One quick question, this is for staff. Regarding convertible parking garages, isn't that already a policy, or is that just a practice that we encourage of the development industry?
Morning. Brad Richter. For the past 2 years on all of our new development projects, we've been requesting and essentially requiring through the design review process that all garage frontages on a public street be a level surface that can be convertible in the future. And almost all projects have been able to comply with that. They use speed ramps on the internal property lines, et cetera. So we have been looking at the future conversion of these garages because people are building 3 to 5 levels above grade after building their below grade parking. So we have been implementing that. We've been considering putting that into the ordinance and making it regulatory, more formal, but we haven't decided on exactly how yet.
So you're moving in that direction, but it's not a formal policy at this point.
Right, it's been required as part of the design review process, but since design review process is going away, we're looking at putting that into the code.
Okay, thank you. I guess this is another staff-related question, and that is, what are the next steps for taking these recommendations and converting them into policy?
The next step, if it gets approved by board, would go to council. And that would memorialize the plan in itself. And then for some of the, you know, low-hanging fruit, that's we can work on that directly. There's some actions, for instance, any sort of metered block or metered street requires an ordinance or previous resolution. So we would actually have to take those that haven't been outlined yet straight to council. So the idea would be we would try to package as many blocks together, and under one resolution, we could get that finalized with city council. Then once they approve that, then we can start metering those blocks that have yet to be approved just yet. But there are a lot of blocks right now, which they pointed out that, yes, there should be meters in the ground. They've already been approved through a prior resolution ordinance, and we can get moving on that quickly. For the pricing, as long as we don't go above $250 an hour, we can actually set those prices ourselves. We don't have to go to council on that. And so that's the range right now is anywhere between a quarter an hour and $250 an hour. And so if we're within that, which I don't imagine us going over that 250 threshold. I think what they were suggesting is incrementally start 50% or 50 cents. You know, I think it's reasonable to go from $1.25 an hour to $1.75 an hour. I'm sure we'll get, you know, a little bit of pushback, but that's entirely reasonable compared to what other major cities are doing right now.
What about the recommendation to establish a management organization, and would that be comparable to the downtown parking group?
Yeah, that's something that we'd have to, I guess, noodle out a little bit further. I know it's a broad recommendation right now. We can look at case studies what other cities are currently doing, but that's something that we are definitely want to see implemented in the near future. It's just a matter of getting the details worked out.
Would that be a governmental entity within the city, or would that be a nonprofit, or
it could be either or. I think recommendation right now was to have nonprofit downstairs neighbor. They could possibly manage that. Right now, we're moving now, but the parking is going to be employed. You know, we're being taken over by the city, so we could. The city could also take that over as well, though. There's a lot of moving parts right now. We're still trying to figure that out, though.
I see. And then, well, I guess that you've answered my question as to who would manage that. So that's still something to be determined. So I've been pleased by the report, and I think that it should move forward for further evaluation, and I'm happy to make a motion to approve this for review by the full board.
Thank you for that. Mr. Russell.
So a few comments. First of all, I think I'll echo what the conversation on the convertible parking garage is really an important concept, because it allows us to have a dynamic built environment and make use of these huge capital investments we make in garages. I'm really interested, and I will support the curb fee for rideshare and eliminating some of the on-street parking. If we do that, I'd love to see the sidewalks widen. Gaslamp, to me, I avoid it on weekends because you have thousands of people on the sidewalks and 12 cars that are taking, you know, space that we can't even pass people in that area. I mean, you actually have an opportunity, and I know there is a plan to transform some of those areas. And I think having a curb fee for rideshare is really a good way of helping support that. Dynamic pricing. So you talked about Sunday pricing. Would you talk about having a separate price for Sunday or just a standard rate? Because obviously, yes, Sundays used to be death down here. It's now very lively, but maybe too much parking, too high of a parking fee, if it was the same as the weekday, might be a discouragement. Would you look at dynamic pricing day by day?
There's always a trade-off between trying to communicate very clearly and simply to the public and getting a price or a policy right just for that day. For that reason, I'd be a little hesitant to have something, certainly not day by day, to call out Sunday. There are a few cities, San Luis Obispo is one, where the time restrictions are different on Sundays. I would hesitate to do that, but I could see it. I think if it's called out clearly, I think if Sundays really do behave that differently than Saturdays, there'd be a reason for it.
Okay. And this policy neither requires or prevents adoption of something like that. I think you're making recommendations that Sunday should be included.
Right.
As part of the pricing, I would agree. One of the issues, so I used to go to the New School of Architecture. I tell you, one of the great blessings when I was there was getting 8-hour meters in the vicinity of that institution. You could see how behaviors changed almost immediately with that. But what I also observed a lot of was the number of employees for our entertainment hospitality sector in the Gaslamp. You would see at 6 p.m. when the meter regime ended, everybody would park. You saw everybody in their black vests walking in to work, parking all night. These are some of the lowest paid employees downtown.
Right.
And so how do we, if we are going to do pricing that extends the meter regime into 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. at night, I would be mindful of, I don't think the parking policy is the place for it, but I think we need to be mindful of the impact on the absolutely critical hospitality employees who work downtown.
Right.
How are they going to get into downtown or find affordable and safe parking, within a reasonable distance?
Right.
So I don't think this policy prevents that discussion anyway. In fact, I think it forces a discussion that I want to make sure people are aware of, that it's expensive if you're a server, especially if you're back of the house.
Right.
The price of parking could be prevent you from working down here. Mm-hmm. And then again, I really do like the idea of the TMA. I think that's really important that we have a more comprehensive alliance there. I think the opportunities there are great, and how that is structured, I would look forward to seeing. And so I'd be happy to second the motion as made by Director Jenkins, you made that? Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see anybody else looking to make comments, so I want to make a couple. I like the idea of dynamic pricing. Director Russell makes a good point about low-paid employees that are necessary for downtown, but we have the FRED process that moves people around, so as you get further away from the core, perhaps that's where the dynamic pricing could help people in that situation. I take your point about signage. So it's hard to say that sign the area and 25 cents an hour today and tomorrow it's 50 cents an hour. I appreciate that, but we have a lot of technologies. For example, the meters now don't let you put money in until they start. Mm-hmm. And it only lets you put enough money in to get through that period. So having some dynamic pricing and signage that might address that, I think, is a good challenge, but it's one I think we need to look at, because if you want to get people out of cars, mm-hmm. you got to make it harder for them to find a place to park and force them to use transit. And if we force them to use transit, now we have to find transit facilities, and I think that's a good evolution. I'm going to support the motion, absent anybody else wanting to make. Director Russell, are you back?
I think one of the things with dynamic pricing is that the appropriate app would be helpful in something like that. I think people are far more likely to remember what they just saw on their phone than they are to remember parking zones, times, availability. And so how technology can play into this is something we look forward to seeing. I just want to raise that.
Right. And I would just suggest, I mean, so many good points. And I think, you know, they're all addressable in terms of, you know, well, there's this and then the concerns, you know, lower paid employees, for example, how that works. I think that can be addressed. With dynamic pricing, I think, you know, we're talking primarily about demand-based pricing, meaning where we're seeing that demand far exceeds supply, the price should be adjusted and can help everybody in that manner. When we're talking about, as you say, dynamic pricing, we're probably not talking about rapidly changing prices. With the technology, that can happen, but there is an expectation by people about, you know, where the prices are. So I think the demand-based pricing in recognition of demand greater than supply, that's the main thing we want to talk about. I think dynamic pricing doesn't need to be at this point super dynamic and super fast. We can look at that later, but I think that's a little further down the road. If that makes people nervous, you know, it doesn't have to be that dynamic, I guess I'd say.
I appreciate the clarification. Anybody else? Let's vote.
The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, everyone. That concludes the Real Estate Committee.